Munger.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, March 7th. And happy birthday to my brother.
Hey.
I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2386. Would you please tell us about this one?
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2386 would create a personal income tax credit and it'd be available to licensed teachers that are employed for at least 600 hours during the tax year and they're located in a rural area. And the amount of the credit is going to be equal to either $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And that'll be dependent upon how the school's distance from the largest city within the qualified metropolitan statistical area. So it's created a new personal income tax credit, and it would be available in tax years 2020 through 2025.
Thank you. Representative.
Chair Nathanson, honorable colleagues, David Brocksmith, State Representative in the House District 1, Southwest Oregon, Curry, Coos, Douglas, and Josephine counties. Which is a very rural area, as you know, and so hence House Bill 2386. If you remember in 2017, I believe, the legislature reauthorized the rural nurses tax credit to incentivize our healthcare workers in rural Oregon. This language and this bill only mirrors that within the rural nurses tax credit so that we can utilize it to incentivize our rural teachers to our rural spaces in Oregon. We have a serious problem with housing, as we all know, and we also have a serious problem in rural Oregon attracting teachers. We get new teachers coming out and out of college and into the workforce, and then we get some retiring teachers. And as we do so, they like to make a little more money. And rural Oregon and some of my rural school districts, it's very difficult for those wages because they just aren't there. And so when you already have competition with regards to wages and then also amenities in more urban and metropolitan areas, it's difficult to incentivize and attract those teachers to our small school districts of Powers or Port Orford or and so this is one way that we can try to do so. And so I'll end it there and answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank
and
you.
You're going to stick around for the next one, too. Huh?
Yes.
I'd like to. Can you stay for just a few minutes so that we can open that as a separate public hearing?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Continuing with this bill, 2386, we have two other people signed up to testify, John Calhoun and Marcia Kelly.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is John Calhoun, and I'm here today speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. This bill proposes to provide tax credits for teachers in rural Oregon, and providing prospective teachers with adequate financial compensation to teach in rural Oregon to ensure there are adequate qualified candidates is a credible goal. Providing the financial incentives through our tax system is not. Now, at least you think that I'm not sympathetic to this need. My wife grew up on dairies and attended a rural Oregon high school, which suffered greatly in comparison to my suburban public high school. This is a classic case where competitive wages are the appropriate mechanism to ensure recruitment. We start down the road where the solution to recruitment for hard-to-find professionals is to provide tax breaks. We'll soon have a tax system in Oregon so full of deductions that we won't be able to defend it to those who actually do have to pay the full load. Just last week, the Senate Health Committee referred a bill to the Tax Expenditure Committee asking for tax breaks for nurses who are teaching in rural areas. We already provide tax breaks for doctors in rural areas. Now, I feel like I'm Mr. Grinch testifying against such deserving people. and good causes. However, my prior roles as CFO and controller taught me how to say no, and I'm urging you to do the same. We're trying to raise $2 billion for education. The legislature needs to determine how to allocate the funds and listen to the needs of the advocates requesting this. And I would urge the representative who is sponsoring this bill to support the $2 billion funding effort. We should not go around the process through the back door of tax breaks. If there's need for more funding for rural schools, it should be dealt with in the school funding formula. I can think of no more bitter conflict for the legislature if we favor one group of schools outside the school funding formula. The need for additional funds for schools is statewide. And how do we balance that process? Through the normal budgeting process. I estimate that about a third of the 28,000 public school teachers in Oregon would qualify for these tax breaks, resulting in a loss of $60 to $80 million per biennium. It's not a small number. We're seeing a long list of tax breaks. Some are socially justifiable, some are not. Eventually, they're all going to have to fit through that narrow door at the end of the process. And granting any tax cut, the tax credit for other needs, may limit cutting the increase in the EITC that so many favor. And one has to ask, when you're looking at these tax credit expenditures, how do you balance those two? Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee, I'm Marsha Kelly. I'm a public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. I don't think I have so many eloquent things to say as John, but I would echo his remarks. In addition to the tax credits for doctors and in rural areas and emergency technicians, we have a proposal now for a tax credit for pharmacists and teachers. As he said, every time you authorize a tax credit, that takes money away from the general fund, which is what we have since 1990 been funding schools with at about two-thirds. It's time for the legislature to look at every single tax credit and see whether it really is appropriate to not pass any new tax credits unless it is very, very justified, and keep the general fund as strong as it can be. Incentivizing people to go someplace with a tax credit is not necessarily going to get them there if they don't have the infrastructure in the community that the teacher wants, they don't have the other amenities. And passing tax credits like this and undermining the ability of a tax credit like the earned income tax credit, which really does provide stability in rural areas, is just a bad idea. And I do, as well as John, urge you to say no.
Questions? Representative Smith and then Hernandez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the both of you for being here this morning. I think your comments were extraordinarily eloquent. I might share, though, that rather than perceiving this as a backdoor approach, that it's a representative teeing the issue up, be part of a broader conversation as we move forward on determining how to pay for our children. All three members of the subcommittee on revenue of the Joint Committee on Student Success are before you this morning, and I think the representative did a very good job of teeing that up for us to have further dialogue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. As the Representative Smith, I appreciate those comments and I concur.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for being here. Just a quick question. What did you all oppose also the nurses, the rural nurses tax credit?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Hernandez, the answer is yes, for the same fundamental reason. Again, I have a future son-in-law who is going through nursing. I do appreciate the need, and we have a shortage of nursing instructors in the state, statewide, but even more so in rural areas. It's a real need. The state needs to respond. I think there are better ways to do it through the budgeting process.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I see no one else signed up to testify. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2386. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2374. Representative Brock Smith. Yes.
Madam Chair, colleagues, David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1, Curry, Coos, Douglas, and Josephine Counties. What you have before you this morning is House Bill 2374, and this bill was actually part of House Bill 2377, which I appreciate all of your assistance in supporting and passing in 2017. And so we removed this section 20, as this applies to a another tax credit for the purchase of residential newly constructed residential properties. We all know that we have a housing problem in this state. There's many pieces of legislation that are assisting in trying to address that, and we all know that one of those ways that we can do is provide supply, and this bill would incentivize that supply. There are amendments before you that take this from a 10-year $10 million project to a 5-year $5 million dollar project, so that we can use it as a pilot and see how it works. Just really quick, the mechanism in which it would work is there's many individuals in the state that are looking for a much larger tax credit, and they have the ability to do so, similar to what we've already passed in the state that came from the feds with the federal opportunity zones and opportunity funds that I know that you're very familiar with. What this would do, and you might even be able to double down on that utilizing this legislation, but what this would do would be allow an individual to develop a residential property and with certain sideboards that I've worked with DOR and the LFO on, where it must be built between $100 and $120 a square foot. It has to be owner occupied for 11 years. They can't sell, they can only sell the home to another qualified buyer, and they only get 3% interest, equity a year for those 11 years. And so the individual can build this residential property, and then rather than sell it at market value, they sell it at a qualified buyer's price, which would be far less, and then they would get 50% of the cost of the construction of the home as an Oregon income tax credit, which then would go into building more affordable housing for our working families within the state. The benefit is these qualified buyers within the state more than likely are currently renting, which would then open up rental properties for other working families or lower income families as they transition into the ability to start providing equity and investing in their future. This is meant for, of course, our working families across the state, but including our teachers, our police officers, and all the way down to our servers in our local restaurants and so forth. And it's also equitable across the state, as it costs more to build in the urban areas of Portland metro area, not just because of land, but also because of the cost of construction associated with the contractors and so forth, and prevailing wage, but your average area median income is also higher in those areas, where down in my neck of the woods, land is a little less expensive, and the price to build is less expensive, and so just as a scenario, if we were to put this project to work in Bandon, for example, for some workforce housing that we have serious issues in. We're able to build a $150,000 home at $100 a square foot with a $50,000 lot price. You're selling it for $200,000. It can go on the market, that 1,500 square foot home at three bedroom, two bath, could go on the market for about $375,000. The qualified buyer's price could land right around at $250,000, thus saving that qualified buyer $125,000 in the market value or in the price of the home. The builder would then get the $125,000 agreed tax credit in building that home, but you're saving that buyer that amount of money, and you're adding the needed supply to the system. I know it seems like it's a large tax credit, because it is, but it will add to the incentive that we need to add to the supply across the state. More importantly, our contracting sector and trade sectors associated with our contracting jobs haven't really recovered since the 2008 recession. A lot of those contractors out there are only building the $400,000, $450,000, $500,000 homes. They're not building the $200,000, $250,000, $300,000 track homes. This could also bring more work to those trade sector jobs, especially in rural Oregon, and revive those as well. So I know it's a big bite of the apple. It's $5 million a year for 5 years. But as we've all been discussing how to fix these our housing shortage in the state, I think it's a minimal investment, personally, in doing so. So I'm more than welcome to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Your testimony. Ms. Grayson, what can you add for us in the way of a typical LRO overview that I omitted to invite first?
No, Madam Chair, I think the representative hit on all the high points. The only, I was going to call attention to the amendments, but again, the representative, I think, touched on that as well, where the original limit in the introduced version was $10 million. That is reduced down to $5 million, and then shortening the time period is as well, and incentivizing or requiring more of that in the rural areas as in the Dash 5 amendment. But otherwise, I think that was got the summary right on.
Great. Thank you very much. We have one person signed up to testify, John Calhoun.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, my name is John Calhoun. I'm here representing Tax Fairness Oregon. This bill actually does highlight the cost of housing is not just an urban problem, and I respect that. It's a serious issue impacting residents across the state. When land is available for construction, market forces push developers to maximize the house size and price of land so that lower priced housing is not being built. And this is a goal is trying to use the tax credit to motivate developers to build smaller, more affordable housing. We support the goals of this bill. We have serious issues with many aspects of how it intends to solve this problem. The bill is not substantially changed from an almost identical bill submitted last year, and we laid out our objections then, and they all remain. They include the following. Given the significant demand for this size house and the limited scope of this funding, the bill is silent on who gets to decide where the money goes and who benefits. Given the cost of land, we don't think limiting the usage to single-family housing, which is in this bill, will allow it to be used in many areas, and eliminates the use of townhouses, duplexes, or condominium solutions, which are more economical solutions. We also don't like the idea of using tax credits for nonprofits, and because then the bill says they transfer those tax credits to a private source, and that costs money, and it's a waste of resources. In the original bill of $10 million, it would provide about 200 units per year at 1,000 square feet each. If we use this approach to add 100,000 affordable homes, which is one target of how many we need to have in the state, it would cost $6 billion. This is not affordable for the state's taxpayers. So scaling up basically says this is a very expensive solution. we urge this committee to reject it as written until it can address the above concerns, defines affordable, and redirects the subsidy toward less advantaged citizens. All other housing subsidies are aimed at those of 80% of area median income and don't exceed $20,000. This bill would provide up to $60,000 in benefits for those with 120% of AMI. Reducing the amount to $5 million per year and assuring that at least 35% will be invested in less populated counties per the amendments doesn't change any of the points that I've made. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. There's no one else signed up to testify, so I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2374. We will now move to work sessions on three bills. We will take them in the order printed on the agenda. Thank you. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2118.
Chair Nathanson.
Just a moment.
Sorry. Not used to doing this.
Thank you. We're going to be moving quickly today. Why don't you go ahead and explain for the rest of the committee what we'll be hearing.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2118 updates the index that we use to calculate inflation and cost of living adjustments because the previously used index was discontinued recently. The Dash 5 amendment removes from statutes affected by Senate Bill 186, and this is because 186 has an emergency declaration and so can't be part of a tax bill. Additionally, it adds to statute a link to this new CPI, the inflation measure, for use by PERS when calculating the cost of living adjustments to benefits payable.
Thank you. Vice Chair Marsh.
Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 5 amendment be adopted into House Bill 2118.
It's been moved that we move this into the bill. Is there discussion? Are there any objections? That motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2118 to the floor with the do pass as amended recommendation.
Discussion? Are there objections? That motion passes. There's no other business on that particular bill, except assign a carrier during the hearing. Do you have the bill in front of you? We will be assigning a carrier shortly, but not at the moment. Representative Smith Warner, would you like to carry
sure.
it? Well, thank you. We have assigned a carrier now. Any other business on this bill? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2118, opening a work session on House Bill 2504.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2504 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Yes. And LRO, please provide us a summary of what we're doing a work session on.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2504 increases the expenditure appropriation for the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission to $410,000 and increases the annual rate of increase from 3% to 4%. Also expands the type of revenues that they may receive, like grants, for instance. And takes effect on the 91st day following signing day. It has no revenue impact and a minimal expenditure impact.
Thank you. The motion has been made. Is there any discussion on the motion? Yes, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know this is Representative Smith Warner's bill, but I'll be a no right now. I need to understand it better before I can be a yes on the floor. So I'm just going to be a no here in committee.
Thank you, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Representative. I just do want you, I would like to encourage you to reach out to the folks of Multnomah County about this. Sure. And just to give the example that this is one of those many bills that we pass here are things that impact very specific bodies and organizations, but yet somehow we still have the legal authority. We are the ones who have the legal authority to allow them to do any changes in how they operate, and this is an example of that. So,
I guess, if I may, I guess my counter was we heard from the proponents of the bill who are the people who provide the service, but I didn't hear from anybody else who might benefit from the service, and so that would have been helpful for me to be a yes, is if we had heard from other areas that this bill expands on to come forward and say, yes, we need this. So.
Just good to know. It is mostly because it is so specific to Multnomah County, it's a kind of a source of public information about budgeting processes. So if you look at the list, there I know there's in meeting materials a list of kind of all of the organizations who fall under this and whose information the TSCC provides information, basically takes and synthesizes and provides information for the public so that it's more easily accessible. And great point. Okay. And I think it's worth you checking on that as well. Right. So I hope that you will be satisfactorily
persuaded.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Will you please call the roll?
Representatives.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Vice Chair Martin.
Aye. Motion passes.
I'll carry it.
And the carrier will be Representative Smith Warner. Any other business on this bill? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2504. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2235. Mr. Easton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2235, just as a reminder, this is a bill that is modifying the statute of where taxpayers can direct their personal income tax refunds. So the way the statute is drafted right now, these direct deposits of these personal income tax refunds have to go to a bank or a financial institution. That is being modified by 2235 to allow the taxpayer to specify where those funds will go. Just as a note, of course, for these direct deposits to go through, the receiving institution will need to allow or be able to receive ACH deposits for Department of Revenue to actually push those direct deposit of personal income tax refunds through. So that's just a note there. We do not have any amendments. The revenue impact statement has no impact, as well as the fiscal.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2235 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. And I think the carrier would like, Representative Marsh would like to be the carrier, correct?
Sure.
Good. That's noted. Any other business on this bill? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2235. Mr. Allenek, there is no other business before us today. Is that correct? We are adjourned.